You're joining us for another episode of College Talks and More, brought to you by MyBookCart.com. This series brings together students, parents, and professionals sharing their voices on a variety of college and life topics.
It's all about students, parents, and all of our listeners finding the information, encouragement, and thrive they need for a successful college and life experience.
Welcome to College Talks and More with your hosts, Hannah
and Carrie.
Today on our show, we would like to welcome Mike Lynch. Michael is a financial planner at Barnum Financial Group. He develops customized planning strategies for individuals, families, and business owners that enable them to build wealth, pay lower taxes, and protect the people who depend on them for support. Michael is an adjunct professor at Fairfield University. He also teaches consumer-oriented financial planning courses to employees of corporations, government and nonprofit organizations, and school districts in Connecticut. His writings appear in both local and national publications.
Mike is a financial planner for people with special needs. As a father of a child with special needs, Mike is intimately familiar with the emotional, educational, and financial issues that face special needs families. Mike, can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little more about your educational and professional background?
Carrie, Hannah, it's great to be here. And I mean, after all you said all that, I don't really know what else much I can add. My educational background, I'm a West Coast boy, so I went to about five colleges en route, degree from University of Washington in political science and San Francisco State, a master's in economics. Back in my day, Bill Clinton coined the term lifetime learner, and I'm definitely one of those. I got too many letters behind my name to really do it. So my professionally, I was a writer for a while, and I got into this when I was 32 years old, financial planning, and I just love it. It's been great. I've been doing it. I think I'm in my 19th year now, doing it the same way I did it when I started.
Oh, I'm glad that you were able to find something that you really enjoy doing. Can you please tell us what a 529 plan is and who can invest in them?
Yeah, 529s are accounts set up to pay for education. And at this point, they can pay for both K-12 and colleges and trade schools.
How can someone open a 529 plan if they are interested? And is there a minimum investment amount?
Yeah, so 529s are consumer friendly. And back to the first question, what is a 529 plan? It's named after the section, I think, 529 in the tax code. They are each sponsored by a state. So, and they're very easy to open. Minimums vary by plan, but they can be as low as $25. And you can find them directly by searching whatever state you're in. I would start with the state you're in. So if I was in, you know, Massachusetts, Massachusetts 529 plan, see what comes up. And then there's also services such as savingsforcollege.com. It's a information clearinghouse that details each and every 529
plan. What would you say is the benefit to investing in a 529 plan versus the stock market or a savings account?
Okay, well, that's a great question. So the big benefit of a 529 plan is they allow for tax-free earnings if you use the funds for qualified expenses. Some states also provide for upfront tax breaks off of state income taxes for contributions. So if you're going to use a 529 plan, you're probably going to be invested in a mix of stocks and bonds. It's going to be similar to investing in the stock market, except for that you wouldn't pay taxes, okay, depending on how you would invest in the stock market. It's going to be better than doing a savings account. In my opinion, I'm an investment person, and I think you want to match your vehicle to your journey. And college is going to be a long-term prospect. I started saving for my daughter's college when she was born. I knew I had 18 years. Same for my son. Over those 18 years, if I have money in a savings account, it's likely going to be worth less when they go to college than when I put it in because of inflation. So what you want to have is that compounding effect that the stock market at investing in diversified investments can give you.
What can the money in a 529 plan be spent on? Tuition, books, room and board, anything else?
All of the above. And the IRS makes it very clear, and they have a publication 970, and it's actually very readable. So if you have any questions, Google, go right to the source, which is the IRS publication 970, And it talks about what qualified education expenses are. And it's in Chapter 8. It's a qualified tuition program. So, yes, they can be used for tuition. They can be used for books. It can be used for room and board on or off campus, depending on what the school publishes is reasonable. The one thing that it can't be used for is healthcare expenses. So sometimes with our clients, they send us a college bill and we carve that part out. We don't want to have that part paid by the 529 for the student health fees because it would not be considered a qualified expense.
Oh, that's good to know that you can also use it on off-campus housing.
Yes, and be sure to ask the school what their threshold is, and then that's the amount you could use, you know, up to that amount.
Does a 529 plan apply to all continuing education types, such as trade schools, graduate school, any types of certificates?
In general, yes. If you can get financial aid, federal financial aid, it counts. So trade schools, absolutely. Like, I had a truck license when I was 18, and I've now lost it, and I want to get it back. So I may have to use some of 529 plan to go get my commercial truck license again, just for the heck of it. So certificates, like if I was going to do a certified financial planning certificate, the answer is no, because that's a certificate program. You have to be at least a full-time college student enrolled in a matriculated plan. So that one would not count.
Are there any tax credits or deductions with the 529 plan? And are there any tax benefits?
Yes. Again, the tax benefits, really the whole game with the 529 plan. Because if we think about it, outside of individual stocks, if you're going to be in the mutual fund world, and in 529 plan, you could get close to anything you wanted, depending on the state that you picked. Again, the key is all that earnings, all the earnings are compounded. I literally have clients going to paying for college right now, expensive colleges, where $70,000, $80,000, up to $100,000 is income tax free on the gains from the years that it was in the 529 plan. So the tax deferral is unbelievably good. Second, some states, now, I think we're all sitting in Connecticut right now, or at least I know Hannah and I are, will offer an income tax deduction at the state level. So if you use a Connecticut plan and you live in Connecticut, when you contribute, that money does come off of your Connecticut income. So some states offer that. Again, to find out if you're in a state that does, do a little bit of internet research.
Wow, it sounds like there's a lot of benefits in investing in a 529 plan. So on the other side, what fees are associated with a 529 plan?
So the fees are going to vary by plan. And the good thing about investments is the fees are all fully disclosed and they're easily discovered prior to investing. So there might be a small fee to set it up, $5 or $10, depending on the plan. If it's a direct plan, you're not going to pay for an advisor like me. You just do it yourself. You're going to make your own decisions, do your own paperwork, so you don't have that advisory level fee. And then you can see what what's called the expense ratios on the individual investments right on the website or in the plan disclosure booklet. They're within lines of other investments, and the fees have been coming down. If you go through an investment professional such as myself, there could be an additional layer of fees that would compensate investment professional through your investment. Again, that would be up to you. Some states like Connecticut sponsor two plans, a direct plan and an advisor plan. I know Virginia does. Some only have a direct, and I don't know if any only have an advisor. But again, you do not have to use the plan of your state. You can use a plan from any state.
So let's just say that I open a 529 plan for my son, and he doesn't go to college. What happens then?
Well, first, the money does not need to come out. So you could leave the money in the plan. It's never going to be forced out. Your son has a child, it could just change a beneficiary, and it could be an education fund for your grandchild, okay? So it doesn't need to come out. But if it does come out, there'll be taxes and penalties on the gains. So if I put in $1,000 and it's now $2,000, and I took the $2,000 out, $1,000 of it would come back to me as a return of my contribution. It wouldn't be taxed again. And then that other $1,000 would be taxes income, and there would be a federal penalty associated with the distribution that I believe is 20% now. It used to be 10, but I believe it's 20 now.
So we all know that the stock market has a tendency to go up and down, especially now with COVID. There's been some wild swings. So let's say you put money into a 529 plan. Is it guaranteed that the money will be there when the student attends college?
Well, it won't be stolen. If it's invested, it's going to depend on investment returns. Now, each plan has many options, and I believe there's even one that is a bank. So if somebody wanted many of the options, like in Connecticut, there's a stable value option. So when your child gets closer to college, you can lock in your gains and be a little bit more conservative. So it won't be stolen. It is going to go up and down. That's both the good and the bad news. And you have to be very careful as your child or you approach college. I like to say that college, investing for college is the hardest thing to do because it's like landing an airplane on an aircraft carrier. You got to get down and you got to stop. You have 4 years. That's it. Hopefully four, maybe five, maybe six if there's graduate school. But it's not like retirement where I invest for you. You hit retirement at 65. You look me in the eye and say the market just dropped. I said, relax, you got 30 years. You're still a long-term investor. So yes, the investing in the 529 plans, it is going to be very important for people to select a plan that has options that are going to meet their preferences for growth and then also for safety.
So knowing that it goes up and down, what can a parent or grandparent expect for a return? Say they invest $1,000, what are they getting back and how much time does it take to get that?
Again, short answers you can't say. It's sort of too general and it's going to be the same as other investments by the same category. So here's what I mean by that. If I'm investing in a balanced mutual fund of stocks, bonds, and cash, and historically, now we look back in investing, we know what happened in the past, but the past does not predict the future. And I just want to be really clear. And I also want to be really clear. I did a radio show for 10 years. And the first thing I would always say is don't take specific advice from a radio show because you have to apply it to your situation. And so I'm going to give that same caveat here. Okay. But in general, it's good to use the rule of 72. And the rule of 72 says, take the rate of return that you expect and divide it into 72, and that's how long it takes for your money to double. So at 7%, 1,000 becomes 2,000 in 7 years, and in 14 years, it becomes $4,000. So I would encourage listeners to go, again, do a little research on your state's 529 plan. If you have a financial advisor, talk to your financial advisor. Look at what returns have been over various periods, and you can get a sense of what you likely expect. Okay.
All right, great. So I'm thinking about opening a 529 plan. I have two kids. When should that be started? And is there a point where it's too late to open a 529 plan?
That is a great question. When I work with my clients, we start them immediately. We wait till there's a social security number. I think I have started them when people were still pregnant, and I did it in the parent's name, and then we moved it to the child's name once the child was born with the social security number. But typically, we're going to wait till the baby is born. But I love starting it at age zero because now we have 18 years to get that money in. And I like to say, inch by inch, it's a cinch, but by the yard, it is hard, right? So when I started out here, UConn, you know, the colleges that our clients typically targeted would take $300 a month, would get you through a public school, and close to $1,000 a month would get you through the more expensive private schools based on the reasonable assumptions. So start it early. Second, there are great things to do it even at the point of going to college. One of the things I mentioned was the state tax breaks for 529 contributions. So in states that have tax breaks for 529 contributions, oftentimes with clients, I will just funnel the money right through it. Put $10,000 in the 529 plan, get the tax break, send the $10,000 to the college. So there, of course, we'd be using a different investment strategy. We wouldn't subject that to market fluctuations at all because we'd be needing to spend it at that point. So to answer your questions, I like to start them early, but there are some cases where we use them right at point of need as well.
So let's say somebody does everything right. They open a 529 plan, you know, they start saving for college, and there's still not enough money available for when they actually want to start. What are the different types of student loans that are available to someone who needs the extra cash?
Well, in general, there's grants, loans, and then more loans. And there's also other sources of financing outside of 529s that we can talk about in a minute if you'd like. But in terms of the loans, you have the grants that are based on need and or merit, and those typically are going to come either from the federal government, the Pell Grants based on the need, or come from the school based on the merit, okay? And the ones from the school are really just tuition discounts. They want you. It's good. Don't ever assume that you have to pay the sticker price of a school that you're going to attend. Once given a speech to a group of relatively low-income workers in Connecticut, and I put up the cost of UConn, I put up the cost of a junior college, and I put up the cost of Yale. And one was like $60,000, one was like $25,000, and one was like $15,000. And I said, which is the most expensive school for you to go to and which is the least expensive? I'm not sure what I said for the most expensive, but guess what I said for the least expensive?
Yale.
It was Yale. Yale. Because if you get into Yale and you're low income, you're paying zero. It's a need-blind school. My ex-wife used to teach at Stanford, and then she taught at Yale. And so we would take kids from San Francisco down to Stanford, and we would explain, you get into Stanford, it's free. Free. Zero. So don't confuse the sticker price with the price you're actually going to pay. Dream big, go big, then make the financial decisions on the backside. That said, you got grants, you got federal subsidized loans. Those are the type of loans where you don't have to pay the interest. The interest is not accruing until 6 months after you graduate. So that is close to free money, but you do have to pay it back, right? So it's not free, but you have to pay it back. Unsubsidized, you don't have to pay for the interest, but it is accruing from when you take it out. So those ones actually get bigger than you got. You got to be careful with those. And then, of course, you could have private loans on the borrowing market. A lot of the new companies are coming out with that. And then, of course, parents can borrow against it, too. Other sources for college include IRA withdrawals, Roth IRA withdrawals, other investment accounts, and, of course, parents and grandparents, bank accounts and earnings.
What is the difference between a private and federal student loan?
Well, the federal loans are backed by the government. And the rates are set by the government. So I think the rates in general are lower than the private loans, although not always now because there's certain companies that are really targeting people and are marketing to people, not targeting in a bad way, good way. And the private loans are given out on the private marketplace. So the federal loans do have limits. You can't borrow enough to finance the whole college through a federal loan. The limits would not typically pay for the college experience. Might pay if you lived at home, though, just to pay the tuition.
So how do you forecast a student's educational needs?
How we do it is we sit down and we talk. We say, Hannah Carey, what kind of educational experience would you like to provide for your children? And then you say, well, Hannah says, well, my parents paid for a private school. They said, go wherever you want. I got out without student loans. And so that's what I would like to do. That's my value system. I want to do that. So in that case, we'd say, okay, well, Hannah, where did you go? Hannah says she went to Connecticut College. I look it up. I see it's $80,000 a year today. I put it in my software. I look at what the inflation's been, maybe 3-4%. It's coming back down a little bit. And then I say, perfect. That's going to be your target. $320,000 in today's dollars. And then we say, okay, how do you feel about that? You're like, great. And we say, let's just invest for it. Or I talk to Carrie, and Carrie says, look, it's important for me to educate my children, but I'm not paying for that private experience. What I'm going to tell them is I'm going to pay for whatever full college experience would be in University of Connecticut. And then if they choose to go to a more expensive school, that's going to be loans on them. Okay, so then we'd look up University of Connecticut, and we'd figure it out. We make our assumptions, and now we would say that it was X amount of money. We'd put it in the software. Here's what we need to invest for you. Other ones you could say is, look, you can get educated. See, the cost of an education isn't really the education. It's the experience. And here's what I mean by that. I work with two people, two employees, who got MBAs from UConn very efficiently. They lived at home, and they went to branch campuses, right? Got great educations. But when they weren't paying for the room and board, the dorms, all that kind of stuff, it was a different experience. I think when we look at how much college costs, we have to separate out the education part of it from the sort of summer camp part of it. And, you know, it might be we love the summer camp part. I certainly did. And that's part of the experience. We can get the education part for a lot less to these sticker prices.
Well, I think it's both important to have an education and experiences. They help you grow. So it's good to know that we can look forward and not just look at the tuition, but also add in the experience for our children.
I work with the families. So my families will tell me different things. Different families will have different sort of values around this. And it's my job to facilitate their values, right? You tell me where you want to go and I'll help you get there. So those are just a different option that we'll lay out. All the data is published. The College Board, if you Google College Board, your listeners do, and they put in any college, they can find out exactly what the published prices are. My only caution is that's kind of the max you'll pay. If you're a good fit for the college, they may give you discounts and call it a grant. You may pay a lot less.
See, I'll pay for the experience, but I'm not funding their bear fund.
See? So, but yeah. I mean, look, I got arguments with both sides. There was a person who was writing in the financial planning magazines, a great columnist, and he told his kids he'd only pay for 2 years. And I, at the beginning of this column, I was very negative against him. I said, you work in finance. You have 18 years of finance. What kind of attitude is that? And it was just a great column. He had four children, and they all like made very, very good consumer decisions on it. One was an artist. She just went to art school. She's like, I'm not doing any of these other classes. I'm paying. That's me. Another one got a year of college knocked off in high school by doing all advanced placement. So then she informed her father that that was one of the years she was paying for. So she only had to pay for one. So anyway, there was creativity, and my mind changed on it. I started the article very negatively inclined that somebody just didn't want to do a blank check for education. And I ended the article saying, wow, that system really produced some benefits. So I think it's the family values. Every family looks at things just a little bit differently. And, you know, that's it, right? And again, I help facilitate getting the money that they need there the best, most efficient, tax efficient way we can.
Now, you mentioned earlier that there's a 6-month grace period for student loans to start being paid. Can a student repay their loans early? And are there any benefits to that or disadvantages to that?
So I do not know if you can pay the student loans off early. I believe the answer would definitely be yes on the private loans. I'm not sure on the public loans. If there's no interest accruing on the principal, the benefit of paying it off early would be a psychological benefit because it's free money until the interest starts accruing. However, it'd be a good psychological benefit. And if you started paying, you know, the principal would be lower by the time the interest did start accruing. So in that sense, if you were paying it on an installment basis, yes, there would be an advantage to paying it a little bit earlier because by the time the interest started to get accrued, there would be less principal for the interest to be generated from.
Can student loans be refinanced?
Yes, it can. They can be refinanced. There's a lot of services out there now that are doing it. What I would caution you is to be a little bit careful with financing the federal student loans because it's a political issue now. And there are some loan forgiveness programs that you may be eligible for, and there may be new ones that they create. And if you refinanced, consolidated, took your federal student loans, put them on a private loan, and then Congress passed a bill and the president signed a bill into law that was going to forgive your federal student loans, you would not be happy. So I would consider all the programs that are out there before you would refinance federal loan onto a private one.
Well, that's good to know because I would know that I would be mad if my loans could have got forgiven but didn't.
Yes.
Is it more beneficial for a student or the parent to take out the student loans?
I say usually the student, unless you are the student, then it's the parent. The federal loans are the student loans, so it's usually more beneficial for the student. Also, the way I look at it with my clients, it's good for students to have skin in the game. We hear a lot about these big, big student loans. But last time I looked up the data, and it was on, I think, the Federal Reserve does a survey of consumer finances, which is very good, every 3 years. The average student loan was about $20,000. It was actually less than the average car loan. So for kids to know that they have to pay back some money after they get done with their education, that's not necessarily a bad thing for them to stay focused on the goal, which is to get education and be productive. Now, there is a big difference, of course, between $20,000 and $200,000, and that could be a big burden on the way out. So there's always going to be variation. But on the average, I think that, you know, student loans are a good thing because they do facilitate human capital. They help people. Everybody can get education.
Yes. And it might make someone a little bit more responsible if they know that they do have something to pay back after school. Maybe it'll help them give just a little bit of a push to go get a job. So how are rates determined? Is it determined by income, or is the interest rate the same for everyone?
So on the federal loans, they publish your rates every year, and they're based on prevailing interest rates in the economy, and they're just set once a year, I believe. The private rates are set, you know, based on credit scores and everything else out there, just like any other loan might be. And the parent loans, typically, in my experience, they haven't been really low interest rates. Federal rates were typically a lot lower in my experience.
You mentioned earlier what the 529 plan covers. What does a student loan cover? Is it just tuition, or can you spend it on everyday and living expenses like textbooks, lab fees, meal plans, parking, room and board, transportation, eating out, stuff like that?
Back when I was in college and going to UC Santa Cruz, we could actually spend it on Grateful Dead tickets.
Awesome.
Yeah, so student loans is money. So you have to be qualified. You have to be enrolled to qualify for it. It's not enough to cover the whole bill. So typically, you don't turn in receipts on a student loan. So, but it would be fraud if you were to take a student loan and were not enrolled, then I think you get into hot water. So there, you don't have the same type of restrictions. It's a loan. A loan is not income. Doesn't generate a taxable event for you either.
So I know that Barnum Financial Group also offers life insurance. Do you recommend that students get life insurance, or is that only just for parents?
Well, typically you're going to buy life insurance when you owe somebody or you love somebody. And you're going to use insurance. If you think about using the insurance function in society, if you have a car, you want to have insurance if you're liable to hit somebody so you don't get wiped out. And then you want to have insurance that if your car gets smashed up, you can get the economic value put back so that you can have a car, right? Now, usually parents are not dependent on their children for income. So usually with my clients, I am not looking at an insurable need when a child goes to college for life insurance. So one exception to that, I have run into it, is where a parent has a lot of student loans. The student was going to help pay back those student loans, and then the student passed and they still have to pay those student loans. So if you meet that situation, then I might look at some inexpensive term insurance. And I could imagine if that was a situation, the loans would be there because money was probably tight. And so I would, you know, look at just getting the job done with covering that need. But in general, 9 out of 10, no.
Why should someone decide to invest with the Barnum Financial Group?
What I answer to that is everybody should invest with me. No one can invest with Barnum. You can only invest with advisors, right? So I can only recommend me because I control the quality of the advice. But what I will say in general, that was kind of a funny answer that I wrote down to go through the compliance, is you want to have a personal relationship. If you're going to use a financial advisor, one, you want to make sure they're good at financial advice. I always recommend give them a calculator and have them calculate a mortgage and have them hand calculate the cost of college in front of you. They should be able to do it, right? And if they can't, well, you might want to go a different direction. Second, what people say, you should understand it and you should agree with it. It's a very, very personal relationship. And each of us is not everybody else's cup of tea. Otherwise, we wouldn't be diverse. You know, we wouldn't have diversity. We're all unique individuals. So I think you just need a good relationship with an advisor. What they say has to make sense. And then I think they have to have real advisory sort of types of skills. And you want to make sure that they have a lot of different options available too. It's not just one option, because that might not be the best for you.
Now, let's get personal. Ah. What are your hobbies?
This last year, I did a great thing. I took... You know, I have my special need daughter. It's just a wonderful gift from God. It makes everybody happy, including me. And I like to do a lot of stuff with her, right? Because she's 19. She's cool, you know, playing on the hand computer and stuff like that. But I want to get her out. And so I chartered a fishing boat in the fall to go fishing with her. And I thought, I think she'll probably like it. And we did. We had a great time. And I came in and I saw a boat club. So I joined a boat club that day. And I've already been out this summer about 18, 20 times I fishing. And so I love it. It's a blast. And I take my daughter. We also go to the gym. So we like to work out. Now that is the one thing that COVID has unfortunately been very negative, is we had great gym routines. We had trainers, all of us. I bring my daughter, my son. We had a great time. And that's not happening now. I like to read. I used to be a book a week reading guy. Still do a lot of books, a lot of podcasts like this one, and I do a lot of audio books. I do big, big history books. I like to travel a lot. I like to travel. I probably had about 10 trips canceled from COVID, but, you know, like I said, the boats kept me home and opened a new door that closed, and I like rock concerts. I love rock concerts. I've seen Kid Rock like 6 times one summer in a row.
That's awesome.
Very bad. Yeah, it's fun.
I don't know if you've had a chance to head over to Rhode Island, but Rhode Island has some great deep sea fishing.
Funny you mention that, because I got a call from my buddy last night, and there's the Bluefish tournaments coming up in 2 weeks. It will have probably already been gone by the time this plays. And so, yeah, I looked at my schedule. I said, I'll be right there. So we're going to go out and go. We're going to fish Rhode Island, I believe. Fish tournament. Spend a couple nights on the boat. So it should be good. And I'm still learning. The other thing I like to do is learn. So I don't want to give the impression that I'm an expert fisher person. I'm learning. But and we catch every time we go. And it's just a lot of fun for the whole family. And I think there is going to be a lot to learn. So, 5 years from now, I'll probably have better fish stories.
What made you decide to become a financial planner with an emphasis on special needs clients?
Well, I have this special daughter, and as I said, a gift from God. And what happens with special needs children is a lot of things happen. One, they can be very, very expensive very early. So they can put a tremendous amount of financial stress on families, and that stress needs to be dealt with. And so it needs to be planned for. Second, children are going to be dependent. They may be dependent, may not. I've great client cases where people thought they were going to have dependent special needs kids, and lo and behold, boom, there's a place in this world for so many people, right? So many people. I don't even know what normal is or typical is. But like in my case, mine is always going to be financed and financed by me. So what you need to do is you need to start planning for that early, and you need to put structure in place for when you're not around. And so it's kind of experiences what did it. I say I specialize in it because I do, and I'm happy to do it for clients, and I do a lot of it with clients. It's definitely not the only thing I do. I got involved with special needs organizations, so that helped as well.
So how is working with special needs clients different from working with your other clients, or is it different?
Well, special needs planning is typically upside down financial planning, okay? So if we think about what we're talking about now, we're talking about coming up with anywhere from $20,000 to maybe $80,000 a year to fund college in 18 years. One thing that happens with special needs is mine was diagnosed on the autism spectrum, and I live in Fairfield County. And so autism in Fairfield County is very expensive because there's all these private services and everybody's telling you what you need to do. And I think we were close to paying the cost of private school when she was diagnosed in 1.5 years. So when she was probably 3, 4, 5, the early years, we didn't have time to save for it. Right? We incredibly expensive. And so we had to find ways to put it together, rely on family, borrow money, do the whole thing. Because when you have a child and you're trying to do everything you can for this child, as all parents typically will do, and people are saying, well, you need to do this. I call it the autism industrial complex, but it's going to cost, $10,000. You have to come up with $10,000. You have to deal with the school district. That requires lawyers because they have a law that says, they have to give everybody a free and appropriate public education, but free and appropriate are defined very differently from a parent's point of view to the school's point of view. So if you're going to play that game, you got a lawyer up there. That's a couple of examples. The second thing, though, is so the expenses can come earlier in a child's lifetime. There's a lot of times for the actual regime at the end, the kids can't have money in their names if they're going to rely on public and government programs. If we take somebody like my daughter who will never be able to earn a living, when she's 18, 19, she's eligible for Medicaid. She's eligible for some income assistance. These are all means-tested public support programs. Maybe some housing, maybe not. Day programs, job programs, all this stuff. Typically, in many cases, the price of admission is you can't have money. But the program itself is not enough to provide the quality of life that we want for our children. So we need to get money in trust, that special needs trust that'll preserve the ability of the child to get the government programs that they need and rely on, but then also give them a lot of extra things in life that they're going to want to have.
So you said that a special needs child to get a lot of benefits older, they can't have money in their name. Does that mean that you wouldn't be able to set up a 529 plan, or that you shouldn't set up a 529 plan for a child with special needs, but that you still think will go off to college?
Well, that is a fantastic question. And typically, if a child is going to be able to go off to college, they will be at a level of functioning where they will not be eligible for the many of the programs that I just mentioned. A lot of those are IQ driven, and they do manifest themselves on the lower end of the spectrum on that base. That said, there is a new Section 529 plan called the ABLE account. It's a fantastic account. It's designed for special needs kids, and you can put money in, and the money that comes out could pay for education, could pay for anything, and it doesn't affect the asset tests for a lot of these programs. Connecticut, the state I'm in, doesn't have one yet. It's just on the back burner. New York does at this time, so some of the states have that. So, yep, that was anticipated, and that is being addressed, and the ABLE account is under the same section that the college accounts are. As a matter of fact, it is a Section 529 plan.
Wow, that's great to know. All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We know that you're a professor at Fairfield University. What classes do you teach?
I actually am a former professor there. I haven't taught there in a few years, so I need to get that updated. What I did teach was financial planning. So I taught basics of financial planning, what kind of what we're talking about now. Education is under that. I taught insurance. And a couple times I taught taxes.
Tax class.
So it was very, very, very rewarding. I ended up giving it up because I wanted more time kind of with my kids, I tell you, you know, with my kids. They're getting older and I wanted to spend a lot of time with them.
It sounds like you are very busy, but are you involved with any other community or university organizations?
Yeah. So the ones that I've been involved with over the years, the Kennedy Center has just been absolutely fantastic organization that does jobs programs for special needs individuals in the area in which I live. So that's, you know, I live in Stratford. It's not the Kennedy Center that does the plays down in D.C. I've been very, very involved in that. It's just fantastic. Foundation Barnum Financial has a foundation for life. We give our focuses on kids in the communities in which we serve. We give out hundreds of bikes a year. And we give out money for other organizations. So those are the two that I've principally been involved with.
Wow, that's really great. Is there any other advice that you want to give to us and our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, financial planning is about time and money. And inch by inch is the cinch, by the yard it's hard. And I think, you know, college, I'm very insistent. You'll hear out there, oh, don't fund college, fund retirement. I think for my clients, and I work with a wide range of clients, middle-class clients, this is not just the wealthy. College is a retirement issue. When we have a baby, let's get some money going into an account every single month that's earmarked for higher education. If you went to college and your spouse went to college, pretty good chance your kids are going to go to college. Now, what type of an account? 529s are set up for this. But other accounts I use would do Roth IRAs, investment accounts where we just get it in the budget and get it going. Because what you want to do is you want to put that time on your side and let the money double and double and double. Don't wait till last minute. You know, I love working with people in their 20s and 30s. I call it the infrastructure for success. I get them invested in their retirement plans. Then we do Roth on the side. Then the Roth contribution can turn into 529 contribution. Make sure they have disability income insurance. If they get disabled, their life doesn't fall apart. And then when they get dependents, make sure they have life insurance. So if something happens to them, everybody's going to at least financially be able to stay in their world and survive.
Well, we got a lot of information today. Thank you, Mike, for coming on our show and offering all this valuable insight on investing and paying for college. I know I found it all to be very interesting, and I know our listeners will too. We are all about humans helping humans. We hope you will join us again for another episode.
I've just had an absolutely, absolutely fantastic time with you here.
And for anyone looking for more information on Mike Lynch and the financial services he offers, please contact him at the Barnum Financial Group at 203-513-6058. This podcast is brought to you by MyBookCart.com, a textbook buyback service where you can sell back your books for fast cash. Here's to another informative episode of College Talks and More.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channel to stay up to date on any new episodes.
Check out our blog and be an insider to receive our newsletters so you can follow anything and everything College Talks and My Book Cart.